Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 63 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the Baron of all baseball podcasts. The Nats GM Show is sponsored by No Halftime and the No Halftime app. You're staring at your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I would love to challenge just one of his players, not his entire team. I know that. But your fantasy sports service doesn't allow you to. Now you can on the all-new No Halftime app. The No Halftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you can pit Bryce Harper versus Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera versus D. Gordon, or Chris Davis versus Matt Kemp. Creating a challenge takes seconds, and accepting challenges is even easier. No Halftime challenges can be private or public and created for the MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started. Real money and fantasy supremacy awaits you. And now you can try No Halftime for free with $0 challenges. Visit NoHalftime.com for more information and to download the No Halftime app for your iPhone or Android device. Receive a bonus by entering the promo code NATSGM at signup. Receive a free t-shirt when you make a deposit. No Halftime, where the fantasy sports even season never takes a break. And now, our guest.
Hey guys, this is Jay Lethal, the undisputed champion of the world. And you're listening to the Nats GM Show.
I am proud to welcome to the show an announcer for Ring of Honor, a sportscaster for Phillies Nation TV, and the author of Phillies Nation Presents the 100 Greatest Phillies of All Time, Ian Riccaboni. Ian, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Hey, Ryan. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited. I mean, you guys didn't beat the Phillies that bad this weekend, so... I'm not hanging my head in shame as much as I thought I was heading into the 10th inning on Sunday. So,
yeah, that all of a sudden, we thought the Harper thing was going to take care of the series, and unfortunately, Papelbon us.
Yeah, that was something that, surprisingly, I wasn't used to. He was pretty good in Philadelphia, even though he wasn't quite the fan favorite that many had hoped he'd be. But yeah, it's still always surprising to see, you know, he's still one of the best closers in baseball. So I wasn't holding my breath that they would get that run in, or those two runs even, but they did. So, you know, we escaped with one victory at home. We escaped with some pride. So, but that was about what I expected. The Nats are pretty great team this year. I mean, they have the qualities of a juggernaut in a bad division, which is kind of scary.
You know, and I think it's great that they're starting out with such a hot streak, because kind of as we saw with the Mets last year, they're going to play the Marlins, the Braves, and your Phillies, unfortunately, 60 times this season. And if you can get a nice lead, it's tough to make up ground when you're playing teams that are struggling towards the end of the year.
Yeah, and that's one thing that the Phillies had the luxury of in 2010 and 2011 when they were doing so well with the amazing starting rotation that they had. You know, when things were clicking with Worth and Utley in 2010, and then even to a smaller degree in 2011 with Utley, Ruiz, Victorino, that team, they acquired Hunter Pence. I mean, they were able to kind of beat up on the teams that they were supposed to, and they had such a wide lead heading into the end of those seasons. It was fun from a perspective of, you know, even though they had won the series in 2008, to many people in Philadelphia, it didn't feel like a fluke, but it felt like something like a fluke where that couldn't happen again. But it was nice to kind of validate that World Series with another World Series appearance in 09 and then in 10 and 11, where they were able to really just put the pedal to the metal and win the division in kind of convincing fashion. Unfortunately, playoffs didn't turn out so well. So I'll always... have a strong distaste and dislike for Cody Ross from 2010 and for all of the St. Louis Cardinals in 2011.
Yeah, I think we're the same way with the Cardinals' disdain as well. So,
yeah,
I became a fan of yours when you started writing at Phillies Nation. Goodness, it feels like kind of the time frame you were talking about, 2011, 2012, kind of that time frame.
Right.
And you've seen, like you were saying, you've seen the high points of the franchise, and now you've seen kind of the transition that's going on, and certainly the bottom, and whether we're in the bottom or not is going on. I kind of want to ask you a little bit just, and I don't want to have you speak for the entire, the fan base by any stretch, but kind of what is the feeling of the fan base right now as you're kind of in the worst of it, but kind of in some ways you can start seeing the good that's coming, down the road.
Yeah, I think the thunderstorm is over. I think the big thing now is we can see on the, if this was a Doppler radar, I think we can see that we're still in the storm, but we see that the storm is moving. Now, what's disappointing to me is I look at some of the competition in the division, particularly the Braves, who are just bad, maybe worse than the Phillies. Certainly, if you look at stats, hitting-wise, the Phillies are at the bottom, but if you look at pitching, the Braves are at the bottom, so kind of a wash there. But that's a team that if the Phillies had been smarter about rebuilding, maybe rebuilt a little sooner, they could be dominating a team like the Braves. The Mets are very interesting because they have incredible pitching, but they are also toward the bottom offensively in some of the statistical categories. So that's a team where if the Phillies had some better offense, maybe they plugged in a couple players here and there along the line, maybe they trade Utley a couple years earlier, maybe they find a taker for Carlos Ruiz, that's a team that the Phillies might be able to beat. And I say that fully realizing that they were the NL champions last year. I just don't think the Mets have enough offensive firepower to compete with the Nationals or to compete on a broader scale once again. I look at the Marlins. I think the Marlins are always kind of intriguing almost every year. Every year they seem to have these kind of out of the left field pickup. And certainly with Fernandez, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. But I don't see them as a team that can really make that leap to try and contend with the Nationals. So it's interesting because the feeling and the tenor in Philadelphia, I feel, is very, very positive, particularly the starting rotation, which is surprising a lot of people. I know we're only 14 games in, but right now is one of the best in baseball. I mean, the starting pitching right now, they have a 3.21 ERA. They lead the majors in strikeouts and strikeouts to walk ratio. They're second in the major leagues in batting average against. They're third in WHIP. And they're fifth in the NL and seventh in Major League Baseball in ERA. And one of the things that they're able to do, they have a bad bullpen, but their starters are getting them late into the game. They're second in the National League in innings pitched from starters and third in Major League Baseball. So they have this incredible starting rotation, and there's optimism there. Unfortunately, on the flip side, the offense not really coming around. I mean, you have, outfielders hitting .088, .125, .175, and .077. Those numbers, Peter Borges, Tyler Goodell, Darren Ruff, and Cedric Hunter, those aren't going to win you baseball games. And somehow this team has already won six. So it's really interesting to me because a lot of optimism building. That rotation is anchored by three guys who could be on the next good Phillies team. Of course, Vince Velasquez, who had 16 strikeouts the other day. Amazing complete game shutout, only gave up three hits, no walks. I think he could be a guy on the next great Phillies team. Aaron Nola, who struggled a bit over the weekend. I think he could be on the next great Phillies team. And then a guy that's really surprising a lot of people, Jared Eichhoff, who was part of the Cole Hamels deal, who very, very, very quietly might be the steal of that deal. I mean, he was not one of the heralded prospects out of the five guys they got for Cole Hamels, and he's immediately providing instant dividends for them. So there's definitely optimism. I think the next step to get to that next step of optimism is filling in some bats. So you see Odubel Herrera, who was actually tied for the National League lead in walks. He did not walk all spring training, and suddenly he's found this amazing ability to get on base by walk. And then you have Mikel Franco, who hit two home runs early, hasn't really recaptured that power yet. Again, we're only 14 games in. That could change in a series, as baseball often does. But there's some optimism there, too. He's, obviously, if he would have played a full season last year, it was one of the deepest rookie classes ever, but he had a great season where he hit, you know, he did very, very well, and his defense is getting better. His lateral movement's improving. So a lot of optimism, but there's still that feeling seeing these bad, bad Braves teams and the not as good as advertised Marlins and the beatable New York Mets that, man, if the Phillies just would have tweaked and moved some guys a little quicker, a little earlier, maybe not traded a lot of their farm to get guys maybe like Hunter Pence or maybe to get guys like Roy Oswalt, that the Phillies right now could have a lot of these guys in their possession, but also have built around them and really kind of kept the party going. I think Phillies fans in general are going to look at 2012 through maybe this year, maybe 2016 is kind of a weird lost era.
I think that's perfectly well said. I think that you nailed it. And kind of the question, another question I want to ask you is just, are the fans upset that it took so long for them to realize, hey, we need to rebuild this?
That's a great question. So personally, I just mentioned, I am, but in folks that I talk to and more casual fans, like my mom, for instance, I think she's the perfect example of a casual fan. Shelly Riccoboni watches the Phillies to try and see Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins. Now that they're not there anymore, not as big of an interest. She still asks about the blonde-haired guy from California, Cole Hamels. And so, you know, for fans like her, it was okay that those guys were around for a while. Because they were guys that they recognized. They were Phillies. The name on the back became the name on the front. And so I think for a lot of casual fans, I think that was okay. And those are the fans that filled in the empty seats in the ballpark. Because I think with Philadelphia, I think you really are going to have a core group of about 20,000 fans that are going to be willing to come see baseball no matter what. As the season tapers on, that number goes down a little bit, around maybe 14. But I think where the rubber meets the road is A, having a winner, but B, also having some recognizable names. And if you're a casual fan, you go to the ballpark and you can identify a couple of the guys that were on the championship team in 08, I think that was important for the casual fans. Now, I'll give you the example of my wife. My wife, I make her watch tons of baseball, and she was struggling in spring training, rightfully so, to identify any of the Phillies because they had such a drastic turnover.
Sure.
And, you know, that's something for me as like a hardcore baseball fan and writer and observer and this and that. That's exciting because that means new names are coming in, a lot of prospects, a lot of potential. For someone who's not as familiar, it's tough. And my wife and I have season tickets to the Sixers, and we can tell you from that.
Wow. Yeah.
It was difficult knowing which 12 guys you'd see. So that feeling has replicated itself with the Phillies. Thankfully and fortunately, I think at least with the starting pitching, it's kind of resolved itself. And maybe some of the position players as well, like Franco and Herrera.
And what's your take on the Hamels trade now? I don't know, not quite 12 months out, but I don't know, what is it, 8 months out from the deal? I mean, like you said, Eichhoff is certainly, you know, blown up since then, and Nick Williams and Alfaro are great prospects. Kind of your take on the deal, you know, at this point.
Sure. So definitely Eichhoff. I mean, he's a guy who came out both barrels, guns loaded, just to the wall last year. And he kind of had to, because when they acquired him last year, he was already 24 years old. So the clock on Eichhoff was kind of ticking a little bit. He faced kind of a heavy depth chart in front of him in Texas, so he didn't get opportunities to hit the majors there. But, you know, when he came over, just amazing end of the season. He was a bright spot. And honestly, you know, Steve Carino and I talked about this on the Phillies Nation podcast. We thought Eichhoff would be okay this year. We didn't think he'd be, you know, 1.89 ERA good. You know, we didn't think he'd be 21 strikeouts in 19 innings good, or one walker hit printing pitched good. So granted, really small sample size. You got to caution with everything. Anytime you're looking at a sample of three games, obviously something, you know, it leaves room for statistical error. However, that's really exciting to see. So definitely, I think a win on Eichhoff. with guys like, you know, Alec Asher. He's a name. He came over last year. They gave him an opportunity in the majors. Didn't stick. Had a really rough time. He's now a starter down in Reading. He's 24. He's starting to get against the clock as well. He was kind of a throw-in. Didn't have really high expectations for him. Nick Williams, on the other hand, he almost single-handedly got the Reading Phillies into the playoffs last year. So he's a guy. He's 22, I believe. And, yeah, he's 22 years old. And he's a guy who they're really testing him now. He hit 320 last year for Double-A Reading. And right now he's only hitting 167 for Triple-A Lehigh Valley. But on Baseball Reference, they have this cool thing where it says age difference. And it compares the age of the player to the median age of the league that they're playing in. Right now, he's approximately 5 years younger than the average AAA player. So, you know, he's got some stiff competition. He's got a test in front of him. After what he showed last year in Reading, you know, and AA Frisco for the Rangers, he had 17 combined home runs in AA, hit .303, 13 stolen bases. I think he's going to figure it out. I think Phillies fans will just have to be patient with him because he is young and he is being tested at a level that he might not necessarily be ready for right now, but very well could be in a couple months.
He's got the prettiest left-handed swing, I think, maybe in baseball, but certainly in the minor leagues.
Yeah, and he's got fast hands. He comes.
Oh, my
comes,
gosh. Lightning yeah, fast.
He comes through the zone really, really fast. So he'll be okay. I think he's just going to need to make some adjustments. And again, it's tricky to tell. They've only played 9 games. They've had 4 rainouts already. They had a really weird anomaly in Lehigh Valley where Syracuse had to cancel all their games. They instead came down to Lehigh Valley. They played in front of one person because the game was not open to the public. It was a WFMZ Channel 69 news reporter that happened to be able to be credentialed into the game. So,
wow.
Yeah, they've had an interesting season so far. I think once that kind of normalizes.
The weather has been terrible in kind of this area, and you're, you know, a couple of hundred or 100 miles north. I mean, it's not been fun, you know, at 7 o'clock when the games are going on. I can understand some slow starts.
Yeah, yeah, and it's kind of happening throughout the organization. I mean, you look at some guys that are a little bit older, you know, in AAA, Taylor Featherston, Ryan Jackson, two kind of utility guys. Major leaguers, they're hitting .444, .375. If you look at some of the younger prospects, they're not doing as well. I mean, you see a lot of, there's a .174. Looking at the batting averages here, Nick Williams, .167. So I think with minor leaguers, I think the pitchers are a little bit ahead to start the season. That being said, Jake Thompson is one of the other guys in the Cole Hamels trade. He's struggled a little bit. Again, he's also super young, though. He's almost 5 years younger than the median age as well. So he's a guy that's being challenged. And I think Phillies fans should have a little bit of a longer leash with him. He also helped the Reading Phillies make the playoffs last year. 5-1 record, 1.8 ERA. I think he'll be fine, but I think he's going to have to get over the hump a little bit. And finally, Jorge Alfaro, who... it's kind of the rare
legend.
He's kind of this, you know, the legendary powerful catcher that everybody's looking for.
And fast. He is some kind of fast.
Yeah, he's a real good player, and I could see him moving to the infield or even moving to the outfield. He could be, you know, he might be a good fit long term in left field, which is kind of weird. But he's got a great cannon. He's got a cannon for an arm. He's hitting .500 right now in AA. Again, only 8 games in down there, but I'm liking where this is going so far. You know, Hamels though, I mean, he pitched so well for the Rangers. Talk about guys carrying teams into the playoffs last year. He was amazing. So that trade was a trade that I think will work out for both teams pretty well. They were able to clear a lot of salary space. They did have to take on Matt Harrison, which is kind of something that a lot of the media kind of glossed over. So they didn't alleviate as much salary as, you know, as everybody thinks, because Harrison's getting about $12 million a year. But they were able to clear a lot off the books and take in 5 prospects. Now, the trade that I'm currently salivating about, the shiny object, is the Ken Giles trade.
Absolutely. That was a steal.
That one, you know, they always say you'll have to overpay to get a player with any kind of arbitration control. And Ken Giles, he's our first arbitration eligible in 2018, can be a free agent in 2021. So he's got a lot of team control left. That being said, he's a 25-year-old closer that throws over 100. So there's some precaution there. I don't know how Matt Klentek, the GM of the Phillies, was able to do it, but he was able to get a 5-for-2 deal, and he was able to acquire some pretty useful pieces. The biggest one at this point being Vincent Velasquez, who has just been stunning. We mentioned the complete game shutout, 16 strikeouts. But there's also interesting guys like Mark Appel, former number one pick, and Brett Oberholzer, who could be an interesting bullpen piece, and he might be the first guy to kind of step into the Phillies rotation should one of these guys falter.
Pitched pretty well on Friday night against the Nationals, actually, as well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He had a pretty decent game. So, you know, he's willing to kind of jump in a jam in that long roll. He ended up pitching 4 innings. We saw him a little bit of a long roll in the opening series against Cincinnati. You know, he's kind of comfortable in that swingman role, it seems. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the first injury, if they don't bring somebody up, if they don't bring Adam Morgan or somebody up and just kind of insert Oberholzer in that role. But
and that's a really valuable piece where the Phillies are right now. So you don't blow out the Velasquezes and the Nolas and the Eichhoffs when they're struggling and push them. This guy can soak up those innings and not ruin the bullpen as well.
Yeah, and that's something for a long time I had kind of questioned, why did the Phillies sign Charlie Morton? And then I was talking to Dan Zimborski of ESPN and Fangraphs, and he said, well, somebody has to pitch. And so
kind of the same thing with the Hellickson deal. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, they've been getting some success out of those guys too. So it's kind of nice when that works out. But at the same time, you know, a guy like Velasquez, you mentioned, he has had arm trouble. Previous to this season, he only pitched 156 innings over the last 2 years. So he's a guy that, you know, for all intents and purposes, shouldn't be expected to go out and throw 9 innings, let alone shutouts every game. So, you know, you're right. They definitely, Oberholzer is going to be valuable, even if they want to kind of sprinkle in some rest for some of these younger arms like Nola and Nola Eichhoff and Velasquez.
So let me ask you, I can't have a podcast and not particularly about the Phillies and not talk about kind of J.P. Crawford and some of your other favorite prospects that are in the system maybe that we haven't touched on.
Yeah, J.P. Crawford. I mean, everybody's high on J.P. Crawford, myself included. It was kind of a head scratcher. This year, he started the year in Double-A Reading. That's where he ended the year last year. But again, he's super young for the level. Right now, I believe he's hitting .298. He's having a good start to the year. Again, super early, but you know, doing the things that you'd like to see him to do. My favorite personal favorite prospect is actually Roman Quinn.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, Roman Quinn is the fastest man I've ever seen. And I say that without hyperbole. Now, this was after his injury in 2014, before the injuries in 2015. So I haven't been able to really see him since then. But he is, I caught him a little bit last year, actually, in Reading. I take that back. He literally is the fastest man I've ever seen. He's really interesting because he started out as a shortstop, and he transitioned to center field, and he takes good routes. Sometimes, you know, like anybody, like Herrera, who converted from second base to center field, every once in a while you scratch your head a little bit, but he's got speed that makes up for it. And he's a really exciting player. If he can ever stay healthy, he's only 23. If he can ever stay healthy and put it all together, I don't see any reason why he can't be a better Ben Revere. And you may be saying, Ben Revere, that's it.
No, Ben Revere's a good ball player. We just focus on his warts more than the positive.
Right, and that's the kind of thing I think you'll expect with Roman Quinn. Not going to hit a lot of home runs, but he is a guy that's going to be able to get on base. He's going to be able to steal bases, and he's a guy that's going to be able to, by the time he gets to the major leagues, is going to be able to play some decent outfield. So, you know, Roman Quinn is the big guy that I look at as kind of a sleeper in the Phillies system. And what's interesting, a couple years ago, he wasn't a sleeper. The Phillies organization was so barren. And he was so good in the early levels that he was toward the top of the prospect heap. But, you know, when you restock your farm system with the Giles trades and the Hamels trades, it's just kind of amazing what that bumps you down to. So, you know, I really, really like Roman Quinn. I think he's definitely my sleeper in the Phillies farm system. Another guy, I'll give you just a quick position player, Andrew Knapp.
Yeah, I like that name. I like him.
Yeah, he's a catcher, so he's got an interesting road ahead of him. He has played some first base. There's a real quiet rumor that they might try him in the outfield.
I was going to say, he might be an outfielder long term.
He could be. I mean, he's a big, big guy. He's 6'1". He's 200 pounds. He's built like a pro wrestler. And he could be a guy that could be an outfielder. They played him in the fall league at first base a little bit. He did okay. But, he's playing a lot of catcher right now. And he has a little bit of a path blocked right now by Cameron Rupp, who's not anything super special, and Carlos Ruiz, who is kind of getting the farewell tour right now. So, you know, Knapp could hit his way onto the Phillies by the end of the year. But it wouldn't surprise me, if they brought him up if he played a large chunk at first base. So,
and that makes sense with Howard kind of moving on and Ruff struggling a little bit at times. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and, Knapp is a guy that last year in Reading just blew the barn doors off at Reading. And Reading's a notorious hitter's park for minor leaguers. So you got to take numbers there with a grain of salt. I mean, Darren Ruff ended up with, 38 home runs
exactly.
A couple years ago. So, but he, Knapp ended up with 11 home runs. He hit 360, hit a .419 on base percentage in 55 games there after his call-up. So, he could be the real deal. He could be the Phillies' catcher of the future. But then again, that's tough too because, people like Alfaro more than Knapp. So,
and they should, yeah.
Yeah, so there's this interesting kind of pre-battle happening where Alfaro's in Reading, Knapp's in AAA, and they're both kind of working toward the same goal. Knapp has hit himself into the conversation, though, so he's definitely another kind of sleeper that doesn't show up on top prospect lists. He doesn't show up on Philly's top 10 prospect lists. He's a guy that I really like that I think could end up doing really well in the major leagues. He is a switch hitter too, so
yeah, that's a good point.
That's kind of rare for catchers, so it gives him some flexibility there.
Yeah, and if he can just hit a little bit from either one side or the other, the next thing you know, that can be a productive catcher. The baseline for offense now is pathetic at that position. So
absolutely, I mean, Carlos Ruiz is hitting under 200, or Cameron Rupp is also hitting under 200. And they both have positive WAR on FanGraphs, so they both have.
If you can find somebody that can bat .240 right now with 8 home runs and play you some defense, that's a starter. I mean, it's crazy, but
absolutely. And I'll correct myself. Rupp RUPP, not Ruff RUF, is hitting .258, and he's got positive value against the league replacement level player, which is kind of crazy. Same thing with Ruiz, who's hitting .190. Mm. So. Amazing. That shows you where the baseline is for catching right now. So if you can bring in a guy, interject a guy with a power like Knapp or even Alfaro maybe in a year or two, that's something to get excited about. And so I think definitely Quinn and Knapp are kind of my two sleepers. They're two guys that were kind of victims of the Phillies restocking the farm. They just kind of got ignored by the pundits a little bit. So
those are good names. I like that. The next question I have for you about the Phillies and kind of my final question about the Phillies, and I could, we could go so many different directions, but just as a Nationals fan, I got to ask, why 6 years after it happened, why are they still booing Jason Wirth?
Right.
I mean, I've never understood this because, I mean, from what I understand, the Phillies offered him about half of what the Nationals did and probably were smart in that decision. I've never understood. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, well, they offered me $2 million more, so I'm going to go down to DC. I just don't understand the booing.
I don't either, and it's crazy because there are athletes that have trashed Philadelphia. There are athletes that have done this, that, and the other thing, and they're not booed with as much vitriol as half of what Jason Wirth gets. It's kind of amazing. Like Pat Burrell came back as a member of the 2010 San Francisco Giants. A team that stole the Phillies fans' hearts and stomped on them, And he's not booed. I mean, he left for the Rays in 2009. He came back. He wasn't booed. You know, guys, you know, there are guys all over the place that have done worse things than to take an offer twice as big for twice as long and not look back. I'll never be able to figure that one out, especially because he was a pretty big fan favorite. You know, he was a guy that, and I think maybe that's where it's coming from. You know, okay. It felt like a breakup where you knew the other party was moving on to something better. And you knew that it wasn't, when they said it wasn't you, it was them. It really was you. And it was like,
yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's the pride of the Phillies fans. I think, you know, if you put an offer, you know, for the exact same job for twice the length and twice the money, yeah, I'm going to take twice the length and twice the money every time.
And so would every person booing him. That's the thing.
Right, yeah. Right. And it's crazy because the Phillies fans were so kind of adamant, and the Phillies fans during their run traveled really well. And I don't know if you remember this, but in 2012, the Nationals were restricting ticket sales.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. They were restricting ticket sales to zip codes within the greater DC metro area. And Phillies fans were trying to find ways to come down and see the Phillies. And it was done in large part because the Phillies fans traveled so well in 2011 and 2010. And
took over our ballpark on opening day. Absolutely.
Yeah. 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 And I remember, which was not great
for us, but for you guys, it was quite impressive.
Right. Yeah. That was Roy Halladay's Phillies debut in 2010. And yeah. So I remember the Take Back the Park thing. And yeah, it was weird because that, I mean, you saw Worth go there and then that happened. And that just kind of started the snowball of the Nats being a pretty good team. So even though Worth hasn't really been worth the money, I mean, it was interesting. It seemed like a loss leader. It seemed like someone to kind of show the rest of the league that, hey, guys are willing to come here. Yes. And then coupled with all the young talent you were drafting and bringing up and things like that, I think it was an important move. Interesting that they gave him that much money, but I think it signaled to the rest of the league that, hey, we'll pay for talent. So, yeah, but as why Phillies fans are booing him, I have no idea.
Particularly today, still. I mean, that's the amazing thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been over 4 years. It's almost five seasons. So
we're on six now. I think we only have two seasons left at Worth. I think we're on season six now. Yeah. Right, exactly. So, well, as I kind of alluded to earlier in the interview, I became familiar with you, you know, when you started writing for the Phillies. And then it was kind of a mind trip for me that all of a sudden I'm watching Ring of Honor, and everybody who listens to this knows I'm a huge wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden I see Ian Riccaboni doing announcing for Ring of Honor. I was like, wait a minute, that's not Smith, that's not Jones, that's got to be the same guy that's writing about the Phillies. I was like, so how did you get involved with Ring of Honor?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. So I was a lifelong wrestling fan. I grew up in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Went to DeSales. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I grew up about 10 minutes over the mountain from DeSales.
Okay.
And
yeah.
They always been a lifelong wrestling fan. The WWF used to do TV tapings there from 78 to 85 before they did the big, big national push. So a lot of lifetime wrestling fans in Allentown. And I just kind of got absorbed into that. I always wanted to be a broadcaster. And, you know, I did it in college. I did little TV things here and there. I did a thing with Bill Gates when I was in college and NYU, and I'd done a couple TV commercials, just little things here and there, and never had an agent, never really had kind of coaching. I just tried to take courses in high school and college, and my degrees in media and communications. So I did all this. I started writing for Phillies Nation because I had my own personal blog for a while, and asked those guys, hey, can you look at this? Can I write with you guys? And then that kind of started full-time in 2011, writing with them. And then I had been on a public access TV show. It was called Hump Night with Chris Freed. We had a huge following in the Lehigh County prison system.
Nice.
Because We're pretty sure that's the only people that actually watched us because they were forced to. That was the only channel they got.
That's a good demographic to be over with, though. So you got that going for you.
Absolutely. And it's we actually did a wrestling episode where Chris, our host, went to the Wild Samoans Training Center and kind of learned the ropes a little bit. And then we did a thing where he had a feud with former WWE developmental guy Matt Walsh. We ran this big show at this nightclub. We brought in the Wild Samoans ring, and a couple of interesting guys ended up being there. Obviously Samu, Wild Samoans, because he helped with the ring and helped arrange that. But also Mr. Touchdown from Chikara, he was there. Kakoa the Flying Hawaiian, who had a little cup of coffee in WWE a couple years ago. And then, you'll never guess this, but Adam Cole.
So, baby.
Yeah, Adam Cole, baby. he was at this little, he was trying to break into wrestling, doing what he could, helping out with the Wild Samoans thing, and right before he started with CZW, and that's where I met Adam Cole. But anyway, fast forward, we had this Connections from the Public Access show. My colleague Pat Gallen, who is now a CBS3 sports anchor in Philadelphia, he was doing this kind of web show, and he was editing it pretty good. And I asked him, I said, hey, this looks like we could air it. Like, we could put this on TV tomorrow, and no one would bat an eye. And he said, oh, yeah, whatever. And so I said, I have this contact, Service Electric. So we got in touch with those folks, and we got on TV in Allentown. We got clearance there on Service Electric, which is a good fit because they had the Iron Pigs, so we would lead into Iron Pigs games sometimes.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so that was a good fit, and it worked out. And then the very next year, we got picked up by Comcast Network, which is the sister station to Comcast Sportsnet. Very shortly into the run, two episodes, they started playing us on Comcast Sportsnet, which was really, really cool. So we started to get a lot of exposure that way. Fast forward to 2013. We are looking for kind of interesting things to do. And my beat, so to speak, I was kind of a roving reporter, a beat reporter, was to interview famous Phillies fans. And I just interviewed Mark Summers of Double Dare. I'd interviewed Tony Luke, the cheesesteak guy, who's been on a lot of TV shows. He's got a TV show now,
yeah,
Frank
sure.
and Food.
Yeah.
And then the next interview I set up was with the Blue Meanie.
BWO fame, for those who may not know. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, ECW original. Yeah. ECW, he's, you know, ECW, WWE, you name it, he's been there. And he said, sure, you know, I think I got the perfect location. We're going to go to the world-famous Monster Factory in Paulsboro, New Jersey. And, of course, being a diehard wrestling fan, I knew that's where Bam Bam Bigelow broke in. I knew that's where King Kong Bundy broke in. I knew that's where, you know, the list goes on and on. The Godfather. You know, recently deceased Balls Mahoney broke in there.
RIP, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just a litany of who's who. Chris Candido, WWE champion Sheamus, WWE champion Big Show. Like, anybody and everybody had kind of broken at the Monster Factory. So I was over the moon. So I actually picked Meanie up in Philly, and at the time I had a really...
Please tell me he's dressed up in the blue hair and everything in the full costume.
He sure was, and we stopped at Dunkin' Donuts, and he's like he's a legend in South Philly. He can't go 2 feet without somebody recognizing him and saying hi and asking for a photo, and he's great with everybody. He's really patient. So, you know, we're in this little 2003 Hyundai, yeah, two-door Hyundai. It's me, and I'm about 6 foot, 220. Meanie's about 6'2", 6'3", a little bit bigger than I am, and we're both scrunched in this little tiny car driving through the drive-thru. And anyway, we get to Paulsboro, and I introduce myself to Danny Cage, who runs the Monster Factory, and we do the thing where, you know, Meanie beats up the reporter, but then we do a little bit of a serious, slightly more serious interview, talked about memories of the Phillies and the Vet. And you know, he had actually gone to one of the NWA Great American Bash shows in 1986 there. And so great, great stories he told. At the end of it, I went up to Danny, and Danny gave me his card. And, you know, he said, don't be afraid to keep in touch. Let me know when this airs. And just a real nice guy. And so I did. And it aired a couple weeks later. And then I said, well, I think, you know, if my friend was interested in getting involved in wrestling, in broadcasting, how would he do it? And that friend, of course, was me.
I have a friend. Yeah.
Yeah, but a friend wanted to do it. And so he said, well, your friend should show up. Your friend should help learn to break down and tear down and reset up the ring and learn the ins and outs of wrestling. And your friend should show up at all the events. And your friend should not expect to do a whole lot until he learns all the basics. And yeah, that's what your friend should do. So, of course, I saw that as an invitation. And I started to learn as much as I could about wrestling through Danny and through Meanie and Bill Wiles at the Monster Factory. And later, you know, our seminar guests, Brutal Bob Evans, Colt Cabana, Powers of Pain, you name it, they were probably at the Monster Factory. We probably had a seminar with them. So I did that and was doing it for about a year. And Brutal Bob Evans came in for the first time. And I did some ring announcing that night. And I did an interview. And he said, something along the lines of, you got a real natural kind of look to you. And I was like, yeah, I don't take steroids. And that's not what I meant. and he said, no, you look comfortable. You look like you've done this before. And then I said, yeah, I do some TV stuff. I try and get involved with, you know, broadcasting, things like that. And he goes, have you ever talked to Kevin? And I'm thinking, Kevin who? Like, I don't know. And he goes, Kevin Kelly, you know, the voice of Ring of Honor. And I go, oh, right. Yeah, Kevin Kelly. I'm a big fan. He goes, and he says, I want you to try and get in touch with Kevin. There's a Ring of Honor seminar coming up. I'd like you to meet him. So little did I know that Danny had scheduled Kevin Kelly to come into the Monster Factory a couple weeks later. So Kevin comes in to do a Monster Factory seminar, mostly on talking and giving interviews and things like that, and some social media presence stuff, which was really good too. And we're going through that, and then, you know, we go through all the wrestlers, they're cutting, you know, interviews, things like that, and he finally says, guy in the suit, why don't you come up here and sell me tickets? And I got up. I don't really remember it happening, but he gave me a 60-second time cue. I ran down the card for that night. I said the word folks a lot, and that was pretty much it. And then he had me do it again a couple more times. We sat down. We went through the line again. And, you know, I went up to him afterwards, and I said, you know, it was very nice to meet you. You know, I'd love to, you know, come maybe watch what you do one of these times, and, you know, next time in Philly. And he said, sure, we're having a tryout camp, and why don't you come be my guest for the day? So I thought, oh, that'd be great. So I went, I did this camp. Little did I know that on the spot I'd kind of have to do almost an audition, a live audition for the executive producer Delirious, Kerry Silkin, Bobby Fish was in the room, Jay Lethal, Adam Cole.
No pressure. Yeah.
Yeah, no pressure. And man, I bombed. I bombed hard. I hit my time cue, but I forgot basic facts that anybody that's ever watched Ring of Honor, which I did, would know. And it was just kind of a nerve thing. And so they let me do it again a little bit later, just in front of, it was Adam Cole, Jay Lethal, and Kevin, and Brutal Bob. And I did much better the second time. And as I loosened up the next day, I did better and better. So from there, I just kept in touch with Kevin. And whenever they were kind of local, I would make sure to go to the events, and local, New York, Philly, Baltimore. And I just tried to show my face. I'd help out with ring crew. I'd help out with this, that, and the other thing, anything I could do. And slowly, you know, I started to gain their trust a little bit. And like, you know, everybody says, how do you break into Ring of Honor as a wrestler? I kind of did that, but for commentary. So, you know, I just went out of my way to try and find ways to be useful. And so that if I was there, I wasn't just twiddling my thumbs. I was helping set up. I was helping unpack the merch table. I was helping, you know, anything I could do. And then finally, I got the call to call my first Ring of Honor match January 4th, 2015, in Nashville, which was really, really exciting. And I'll never forget the match. It was Chris LaRusso, who's been on Ring of Honor TV a couple times. He's a guy out of Pittsburgh. And one of my best friends, Cheeseburger. So
Cheeseburger.
Yeah. And that match opened the night. And that one, to my knowledge, has not been released on DVD or any kind of internet release. So that one might not have been very good commentary-wise. However, I called a couple matches after that ended up as some DVD extras. And it's amazing because to be able to have somebody like Kevin Kelly, who has been in the WWE, who's the voice of Ring of Honor, seen in millions of homes, you know, it's just amazing to be able to get that instant, sincere feedback with someone who cares about how you're doing, cares about the company, wants to make you better. And I can't say enough about our relationship. And then, you know, Steve's much more laid back. He's kind of the color guy for Kevin, but Steve's been amazing too at just kind of calming me down the first couple times. Him and Bob Evans are real good about just keeping it light, because in the beginning I had a tendency to lock up, and you probably wouldn't notice it if you know me for a while, but I get really nervous if it's the first time I'm ever doing anything. So, you know, it was Steve and Bob were really important, just kind of keeping me loose, keeping me light. And then from there, you know, called a couple months worth of dark matches, internet matches. We started to do some Future of Honor matches again. And I had actually called the Future of Honor 2 release, which got released without commentary and then with commentary. So that was actually my first official thing, which predated the Nashville gig, but did that. And then we did Future of Honor, which became a web series, and then Women of Honor, which the fan feedback has been amazing. I'm so proud and excited to be a part of something like that. We have amazing athletes that are competing, and they're finally getting kind of a fair shake across the pro wrestling world. The females are, and I'm just really happy to be a part of that movement and to be able to call those matches, because I mean, you'll see something different, something more exciting in those matches than you'll see with the men. And so I'm very, very happy. We filmed a lot of great stuff across the last couple months that may be hitting YouTube or might be hitting some other special projects. So, you know, that's just been an amazing ride. And
there's some very talented women working in Ring of Honor right now. I mean, Kelly Klein is fantastic. Taylor Hendrickson is extraordinarily both beautiful and talented. Veda Scott, both the same. I mean, they're just tremendously talented, both in and out of the ring.
Yeah, you know, Veda Scott, Taylor Hendricks, Kelly Klein, Deonna Purrazzo.
Yes, an incredible feat. You see her on NXT as well sometimes, yes.
Yeah, she appeared on, I believe, three national wrestling shows in the course of 2 weeks, which is kind of amazing. That shows kind of the hustle that she has. You know, we have Hanaya the Huntress, Mandy Leon,
yes.
Sumi Sakai,
absolutely,
who's kind of the veteran that holds she's like the glue. She holds, you know, everybody together. We've had some amazing kind of imports too, like the Bullet Babe, Amber Gallows. She's come in.
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, it's just been an amazing group. We just got Jenny Rose back from Japan. She's going to be a fixture in Women of Honor, I'm sure. And yeah, I think people will be impressed even more so. And you know, we can tell the fans like it. The fans are watching it on YouTube. You know, the four-way, there was a four-way match in December from Philadelphia, 2300 Arena. Nothing like calling a match there under the bright lights and that atmosphere. And that match is currently the second most watched match on Ring of Honor's YouTube page. Ahead of guys like Bryan Danielson, CM Punk, Kevin Steen, Tyler Black, like the women are, and the Women of Honor. And so that shows you what kind of momentum this thing has and the level of competition, the level of athletics that are displayed there.
Yeah, I can't recommend people just go look on you know, the YouTube channel and go watch some of the matches, because they have been, like you say, fantastic. And the commentator, I got to say, is just amazing doing it as well.
Oh, who's that? BJ Whitmer?
Exactly.
Now, BJ's great. He's another guy that I can't say enough about. He's been around the world, and he's ready and willing to kind of share those experiences to make everybody around him better too. So
last thing I got to ask you about is Global Wars is coming up, goodness, in a couple of weeks now. I'll be in Chicago for it. I'm so excited for it. Can you just give us a little preview, what you can share, what we're going to be seeing in the next pay-per-view?
Absolutely. So Global Wars, it's going to be emanating live on pay-per-view. It's going to be available on Fight TV on the Flips app. It's going to be available on PlayStation and ROHWrestling.com. It's going to be amazing. The main event is the ROH World Championship match between Jay Lethal, a man who's held a Ring of Honor World Singles Championship for two consecutive years, against Colt Cabana. Colt Cabana he had been a Ring of Honor legend, a Ring of Honor mainstay for about 8 years, and we haven't seen him in Ring of Honor for about five. And he decided to come back in Dallas at a show called Supercard of Honor and declare his intentions of competing for the ROH World Championship. And that's a championship that he has never held, in his 7-8 years in Ring of Honor. This means a lot to him. I mean, he's a guy who's been in the pages of Rolling Stone. He's got one of the most popular podcasts on iTunes. He's carved out an incredible life for himself, taking on the mantra and the label of independent contractor, wrestling around the world, but also being an incredible entrepreneur, a guy who gets his face and name out there. He's been in KFC commercials. He helps run 1 hour tees. If you go to Chicago, it's kind of amazing. If you drive up and down around the airport, he's all over billboards. I mean, this guy is a legit star, and he's a guy, one of the best professional wrestlers in the world. He's going to be able to compete for the world championship in front of his hometown crowd, and that crowd's going to be electric. The other big thing, I mean, if that's not big enough, we have the stars of New Japan Pro Wrestling coming in, including the new IWGP heavyweight champion, Naito. He'll be there. You'll see Hiroshi Tanahashi. He's a seven-time New Japan IWGP world champion. You'll see Okada, the Rainmaker. You'll see Gato. You'll also see, for the very first time, two of the Bullet Club members that we have not seen in America. And, of course, you know, I'm talking about the Gorillas of Destiny, who are sons of Haku, and they're the IWGP World Tag Team Champions. So they're going to be there. Just an amazing night. That's the main event, the IWGP, folks. Those matches will be announced soon. You're going to see dream matches you've never even imagined between the New Japan stars and the Ring of Honor stars. One that was just announced today, my dear close personal friend Cheeseburger, he's going to be teaming with his mentor, Jushin Thunder Liger, against The Addiction, Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. So that's actually one I'm super psyched for. And hey, you never know. Maybe there'll be a Women of Honor match live on pay-per-view. That'd be pretty cool. So
that would be great. That would be. I cannot wait for that event. I hope Haku's kids go again and they put him against War Machine and just let him go for 15 or 20 minutes. That could be an absolute just brawl.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I mean, the fun certainly doesn't stop there. I mean, that's live on pay-per-view. That's Sunday night on the 8th. But then Ring of Honor moves on to Dearborn, Michigan the next night, the World of Worlds tour. On the 11th, Wednesday night, we move on to the Ted Reeve Arena in Toronto, Toronto, Ontario. And then that Saturday night, Saturday, May 14th, unfortunately, it's already sold out. It's Ring of Honor's return to New York, Terminal 5, big national television taping with the stars of Ring of Honor and New Japan. So just a week of incredible action lined up. And you'll see the stars of Ring of Honor, New Japan. I'm really excited. I will be in Toronto and New York. I think I may have the bulk of the commentating responsibility on Wednesday on the 11th. So that'll be really exciting for me. That's kind of a dream come true. I'll get to call some of the New Japan stars, which is something new for me. So I'll have to do a lot of studying between now and then. I'll have to go on New Japan World and check out some of Kevin Kelly and Steve's calls. They really excited for them. They just called a couple events recently for New Japan, and they're just such a natural fit and a natural duo. So it's kind of amazing to work with those guys.
Very, very cool. Ian, before I let you go, I want to play a little game of rapid fire if I can.
Absolutely.
Kind of throw out a question. You know how to play rapid fire. Throw out a question and the first thing comes to your mind.
Sure.
Okay, let's start it up. Your favorite Phillies player of all time?
Von Hayes.
Very interesting. I would not have guessed that. That's cool.
Yeah, just he could do it all. And there's a guy who, like Jason Worth, probably gets booed forever for no reason.
That's so funny. Okay, now flip side, least favorite Philly of all time.
Ooh, Jack Tashner. That was the first one that came to mind. Weird lefty reliever.
Yeah, I kind of remember that name. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I think he was on the 09 team.
Yes, okay. Yeah. I got him. Yeah. Okay, next question. Most underrated male performer in Ring of Honor?
Oh, wow. Oh, geez. I'm going to say Adam Page. Adam Page is an incredible athlete. He can do it all. I think he's poised for a big breakout in 2016. So right now, Adam Page.
Okay, same question. Most underrated female.
Underrated female. Wow. This is going to sound crazy because she is a 20-plus year veteran, but Sumi Sakai. She gets overlooked quite a bit, and she is one of the most talented women of honor.
Okay. I like that answer. Favorite match you've ever called?
Wow. Okay, so Dayton, Ohio, October 2015. This is the first time I got to call kind of a main show for Ring of Honor. It was Kevin Kelly and I, and Kevin had lost his voice, so... he had told me, drive the car, kid. It was Briscoe's War Machine.
Oh, wow.
And it was just, it was phenomenal. That, and then there was also, I'd say it's a tie. Me and Mr. Wrestling 3 got to call a match in Indianapolis. It was the Young Bucks and the All Night Express versus the War Machine and the Briscoes. So common theme there, four of the same guys in those two matches.
Shout out to Mr. Wrestling 3, of course.
Absolutely.
Next question. Favorite wrestler of all time?
Wow. Favorite wrestler of all time. Man, this changes daily. It used to be, when I was very, very young, Dynamite Kid.
Okay, yeah.
It then morphed into Jushin Liger. I'm sorry, Dynamite Kid to Brian Pillman to Jushin Liger. Recently, I really like Big Boss Man and Vader. So, any, you know, pick them between those five. Gun to head, Big Boss Man.
I love the Boss Man. That's a great answer. You don't hear that enough either. He was great.
Absolutely.
Okay, next one. Best cheesesteak in the Philadelphia area.
Oh, man. Tony would get mad if I didn't say Tony Luke's, but that's a legit, that's a shoot, brother. That's
it. All right.
Tony Luke's, yeah, Tony Luke's is the best. Steve's Prince of Steaks is pretty good. They're a little bit different. For those that think all Philly cheesesteaks are the same, you can tell by the way the meat's cut. And that's kind of what makes them different. So I'm going to say Tony Luke's with a close second, Steve's.
Okay. Favorite Phillies Nation interview?
Ooh, man. So I got to interview Kurt Simmons at his house. He was a multiple-time All-Star for the Phillies. He broke in with the Phillies in 1947. And he was 86 years old when I interviewed him. So that was really cool. He was a living link to Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth. He had been coached in a tournament, and that I believe played at Scheib, or not Scheib, at Ebbets Field. So yeah, I'm going to say Kurt Simmons, although very, very close second, tie for second, Mark Summers and the Blue Meanie.
That is a very interesting threesome right there.
Yeah, although, you know what? We did an interview with Jesse Ventura that most of it didn't air.
There's a shock.
And it wasn't even because it was political. It's the weirdest thing. It happened that we did an off-season special, and I got an opportunity to interview Jesse Ventura, and we could only use like 30 seconds of it because just the way the show broke. So if that one would have aired, that one would have been my favorite. But we actually had a great discussion about the 87 and the 91 Twins. So,
wow.
Yeah, and in his wrestling days in Allentown. So that actually, it was very cool for me. Common link between him and Kurt Simmons, the conversation went back to my hometown. I'm a really proud Allentonian. So
very cool. Yeah. Final question. Worst wrestling name you've performed under?
Oh, geez. Well, that's got to be... that's got to be my own name, right? I mean, so... It's interesting because broadcasters, you know, I don't think I'm revealing any big secret when I reveal that a lot of broadcasters are like professional wrestlers. They have kind of an assumed stage name that eventually becomes a legal name. You know, when Mark Summers, you know, I'm not letting a big cat out of the bag because he addresses it in his book, but Mark Summers isn't Mark Summers' real name. So when I first got to Ring of Honor, Rick Abani was seen as fairly ethnic, which it is. It's Italian. And it could be difficult to say. So, like, if Kevin Kelly was pitching something, if I was doing a backstage interview and he said, let's take it to Ian Rick Abani, like, they wanted something a little shorter and quicker. So, I guess my only answer to this is maybe Ian Morris, because that was kind of my possible name that I almost assumed in Ring of Honor. It's either Ian Morris or Ian Riccoboni. So I guess I'll go with Ian Morris because I like my real name, even if it is a little bit ethnic.
Oh, because I was thinking you might go with the Riccobonesaw, as I saw on your Wikipedia page.
Who put that there?
I don't know, but I was reading your Wikipedia page, and it was the Ricka Business, the Riccobonesaw, the Rickshaw, and Tootin' Ian. I was like, all right, I got to ask him which one of those.
Oh, my goodness. I see that now. I see ring name. So I have to believe that has to be my friend Dan Feely who wrote that.
That's hilarious.
So the Ricka Business has an interesting story. So I played 4 years of baseball at NYU, and to kind of loosen everybody up before the playoffs, we had a big flight to Louisville, Kentucky, and to loosen everybody up and to keep everybody loose, I actually shaved the front. I gave myself a really bad haircut on purpose, and I shaved the front of my head. I kind of gave myself the Road Warrior Hawk, like the horseshoe.
Okay, yeah.
Kind of somewhere halfway in between Road Warrior Hawk and Hulk Hogan.
Ooh, that's a good look.
Yeah, and and the big joke was party in the front, Ricka Business in the back. So the only person that would know that that would care to go on my Wikipedia page would probably be Dan Feely. So
that's hysterical. That's funny. I like the Ricka Business in the back. You got to drop that in somehow into an episode somehow.
Right.
He's giving him the Ricka Business in the corner.
And then Ricka Bonesaw, that used to be my instant message name. I don't remember AOL Instant Messenger, but the Ricka Bonesaw, that was I never knew that was on there. Thank you for pointing that out.
Shows I did my research anyways, so.
Yeah, right? So, man.
Well, wow. Ian, I can't thank you enough for giving me so much time and being such a great guest. I'd love to give you a spot here just where people can find you on Twitter, where they can find your podcast, and just anything you want to plug.
Yeah, so absolutely. So, yeah, thank you for having me, Ryan. I do a podcast. It's weekly. It's with Steve Carino. It's the Phillies Nation podcast. Easiest way to find it, go to iTunes, type in Phillies, and there it is. So we got that's exciting. That's going for us. Steve's an amazing, if you think he's funny and witty and amazing calling wrestling, you know, even though he hasn't been on the Ring of Honor for a while, Mr. Wrestling 3 has, he's doubly good at baseball. He's just a diehard bleed to the bone Phillies fan. So please check us out over there. He's thoughtful, insightful. You can follow me on Twitter at Ian Riccoboni. That's at IanRiccoboni. A lot of the Ring of Honor guys are getting verified lately. Do not fall for the phony Ricka Business account that I'm sure will start after this. It's just at Ian Riccoboni, my name. And I'm kind of wishing for times like these that maybe I did take Ian Morris, but because I just realized I have a 9-letter last name. But yeah, that's the best way to find me, PhilliesNation.com. I write periodically. I've slowed down a little bit as my duties with Ring of Honor kind of have increased. But certainly check out the podcast, things like that. And please watch Women of Honor. I mean, we have great women athletes. Not even great women athletes, just great athletes competing with Women of Honor that are really proving to the world that wrestling knows no gender and knows no bounds. So you can check us out on our YouTube page. That's youtube.com/ringofhonor. And there's a Women of Honor playlist. You can check those out. And if you're going to write something mean, you can just tweet me. You don't have to, you don't have to write me on the YouTube page. Cause I see you guys. So
I'm making the haters. You see the haters.
Yeah. I see the haters. I see the eyeball emoji. I'm casting that out to the YouTube Ring of Honor sphere. So, thank you so much, Ryan. I had a blast. If you want to, you know, listeners of this, ever want to talk Nats, you know, please feel free to hit me up or even just taunt us because we'll probably be in the basement with the Braves all year. So that's fine too.
Well, Ian, thank you so very much for coming on. I've been a huge fan of your work, both with Ring of Honor and at Phillies Nation for a long time now. It's great to talk to a fellow baseball guy and a fellow wrestling guy. We are out there and, maybe I'll run into you in Chicago if you're there for Global Wars.
Yeah, that sounds great. You know, definitely check that out on pay-per-view for those who aren't going. But Ryan, hope to see you there.
Yeah, I cannot wait. And thank you again for joining us.
Mm-hmm. No problem. My pleasure.
And that was my conversation with Ring of Honor and Phillies Nation's Ian Riccoboni. I want to thank him so much for coming on, and I really enjoyed that conversation. There's so many other things that I didn't even get to with him, so we'll have to have him back sometime later this season. But again, thank you to Ian for joining us this week. We are done for this week. Episode 63 is a wrap. We are sponsored by No Halftime and No Halftime, the app. Thank you to them for being our wonderful sponsor. And thank you for listening. This week is a wrap. Bye for now.